Hey, y'all, you're listening to Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome to the show. We're going to talk about money tonight. I know it's not different than last night, but this show takes your calls, answers questions, brings topics to the front to help you with your money and make better decisions. Kind of excited about tonight's show. Going to go over some numbers. Going to probably surprise you with a few things, but maybe that's not unusual as well. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're over here at 504-260-0995. Winning at Life app, you can email, text, call the show, stream, audio, visually, you know, the TV part as well that we're doing. We're up on Facebook Live, YouTube, Periscope, a whole bunch of other channels on the streaming platform, probably a dozen or so at this time across the United States. And you can go over to my Facebook page, like me, friend me, the Winning at Life page also is a help to you. If you want to email me directly, that would be info@gregoryricks.com. And once again, that phone number to join the conversation, if you've got a topic, maybe a situation you're not sure about, had a phone call today asking about cost basis on real estate. Somebody had inherited a property something like 5 years ago. Now we're have somebody wanting to buy it for, say, neighborhood of $250,000. And they were kind of wanting, hey, how does this cost basis thing work? Well, cost basis is zero if you don't account for it and file it showing that, yeah, I've got gains to pay taxes on. So I get these kinds of questions all the time, and that's not unusual to get those on the show as well. But, if you're wondering what the information I gave out is, they're going to have to go get some help to go back and figure out what that basis is. Now, you might have I'm not a CPA, but that's what you're supposed to do when you're inheriting property. You need to get an appraisal on it. So what they've got to do is get a back appraisal for that tax filing to pay tax, because otherwise the cost basis is zero, meaning the whole amount is taxable. And that property did have some value when they inherited it. And the reason you need that is because the IRS might decide to audit that return and ask, well, how did you come up with this cost basis? And what they need is a reasonable explanation on that. 504-260-0995. And maybe we get into a tax conversation tonight as well. We're looking for some efficiency there as well.
The number. Welcome to the number segment on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. This is where we give you a snapshot of what happened in the financial world today while you were out winning at life. Follow along on the charts and graphs we're looking at, winningatlife.com or the Winning at Life app. Is disaster the right word, Gregory? Is that too hard?
No. Disaster where?
It's just there's so much red, but I look at these numbers. The Dow finished at 31,402. That's supposed to be a bad day, you know, because we were popping champagne bottles when it crossed 30,000 not too long ago. So even though it gave up a little over 500 points, down 1.75%, it just the amount of red, you got to put it in context. Yes, all three of our indices were down, but they were just at record highs, what, yesterday? So S&P was down as well, 2.5%. Now the NASDAQ, they took a little more of a bite out the back of the NASDAQ. It was down 3.5%. But still, 13,119 is what it finished at. That is an unbelievable number.
It wasn't being off 1.75%. That's like nothing. That's like, yeah, you gave up a few days' gains. That's all you've done. You go look at a one-year chart. One-year-ago chart, let me get a date here. Here we are. February 26th of 2020, we were at 26,957.59.
And that was before the big downfall at the coronavirus.
That's one year ago, February 26th. And where'd we close today again?
Yeah, 31,000 and some change.
Okay. You go back, I'm not even, that dip we had at March, the low was 18,591 Dow. So go back to the lowest point, the biggest dip since then, we were at October 30th, and it closed at 26,501. The biggest dip since then before now, and this is not even a recognizable as a dip, we were at 29,982 on January 29th of this year. And what did we close at again?
31,400.
Okay.
Yeah.
This, you know, it's like, this is not some correction or anything. And remember, the market does not go straight up. Let me go back. What's my 5-day chart? Yeah, we're lower than 5 days ago. We go to a month ago. A month ago, we were at a 30,603. And instead of asking this, I'll just say it. Today, we closed at 31,402. If you were away for a month, we're good. If you were away for, we go back to February 8th of this year, we're at 31,385. So if you'd been away for a week or so, 2 weeks, you're looking at, yeah, I'm up. If you're looking at yesterday, you're down.
Point taken.
Okay.
All right. So now tell me about the 10-year treasury, because that was getting a lot of headlines today.
Let me back up here on my page, waiting for the computer to catch up. And we're at, see, I was looking, pulled up all these, running all these other charts. We're at 1.25% on the yield. So the change was 0.143. It was a nice bump up today. We were close to, we were just under 1.4 yesterday. So once again, nice movement on the yield. Remember, now, how does this affect bonds? Yeah, you probably had bond values going down a little bit. Shorter term bonds, less. Longer term bonds, more. So we had stocks go down a little bit. Maybe bonds moved off a little bit too. So once again, when you're looking at building a portfolio, I think bonds should be a part of it, stocks should be a part of it, and index link should be a part of it. Once again, things cycle. And I've got a couple numbers, and I've been given this often lately, but let's talk about this way. Let's go back and look at the last 45 years of the market, because history tells stories. And might give you the last 21 years also later, but the stock market averaged 5.8% total return over the last 45 years. Basically, I'm referring to the S&P 500 index. So the stock market has produced a positive total return gain in 37 of the last 45 years. Yeah, that's 82% of the time. Bonds. Average return was 6.5% total return last 45 years. It was up 42 of the last 45. It's up 93% of the time. So look, it's not going to finish up every year. And heck, this might be a little bit of down year for bonds. But bonds being down is a rare event. It happens more often with the stock market, but not all the time. And you should expect both of those sectors, and it's rarely where they do it at the same time as well, having a downturn. And in the past 21 years, the S&P 500, the major bond index, and fixed index linked, there's only 1 year, one of those asset classes that we use in the Invest 50-50 philosophy did not move forward. And that was in the year 2018. I know everybody's thinking, well, you know, that was back in the Great Recession when it happened. No, it was actually was 2018. Crude oil future, $63.39. Brent crude, $65.98. Not much movement there. Gold down a little bit more today, $1,770.70. And silver off a bit as well, $27.56.
All right, the single stock world looks really precarious. Our big losers were big losers today. There's not one green stock on there, but if you sort it by loss, Tesla led the way, or led the bottom, 8% to the negative. Boeing following close behind with a 5.6% drop today. This Tesla, I'm not telling you to buy the dip, but this is kind of one of those things where, you know, look, they've had quite a few losses and it's been a really popular stock. Is it in buy the dip territory? Sort of facetiously.
I think you should be utilizing indexed ETFs and not getting into a single stock, which, man, that loads up your risk number. So I would be interested in that. I would be interested in a dip in the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500 to push more in. But also, I should stay invested with a portion of my assets no matter what. Also, what could help you have more money in retirement? Probably if you paid less taxes, would leave more in your pocket. If you would like to learn more about doing that, go to gregoryricks.com/too much, T-O-O, much, and let's start a conversation.
Yeah, tax season is always a great reminder about how you might want to focus a little bit on that when you're making your financial plans for the future. Taxes. All right, so we've been doing some yeoman's work here. When I say we, I mean Gregory, doing some yeoman's work over here, spelling out the consequences of when you turn on your Social Security early versus when you turn it on at full retirement age versus if you max it out at age 70. And, you know, some of the common questions is, well, how long does it take to make up those checks?
You know, what got me headed down this road is we do get that question a lot, but also in the reading and, you know, I see advertising and all in the financial industry, and some of that on the late night shows, you say that there are hidden secrets to getting the most out of Social Security checks. You know, are you missing out? And they'll even put a number out there. And then I had a message from an individual that kind of stated, I plan to take my benefits at full retirement age, but my planner says that would be a huge mistake. He suggests I wait until age 70 to start my benefits. He finishes, sincerely confused. You know, he could have also put puzzled in there, or what do I do next? And so some of this goes back to when we had file and restrict, file and suspend, to where an individual could file for their benefit and then pause it, suspend it, so that a spouse could draw off the worker's benefit. Then you also had that on the flip side, even though this person's going to be the larger breadwinner and defer, the spouse turns theirs on at FRA, and as an example, and then that person that's going to have the larger check that's still deferring can draw the spousal benefits off that other, almost like a double dip, a loophole, and continue to grow and defer their benefit and essentially pick up more benefits. And it was kind of a loophole in the system. And they did go fix that a few years ago, but there's still a window for those that have turned 66 before January of 2020 still have opportunities for that. But that group, that is going away. But not everybody understood those unique things about Social Security and how to take advantage of that. And, you know, that is stuff we still look out for. And if that's what the law is there anything wrong with getting that extra benefit? No, there isn't. But they've eliminated the file and suspend, the restricted benefit and such. And restricted benefit kind of means I'm turning on the benefit, but, and this is so that they could restrict it. They could turn on the spousal benefit and restrict it to the spousal benefit and grow their own work record, meaning the lower income of the two. And they can't do that either. If you're eligible for spousal benefits or your own work record at FRA, you can't restrict it. You can turn on whichever is going to get you the most benefit. But you see, and maybe they still carry over to that and confusing people. And this is the other part where I kind of read you the note there where individual was saying, well, they told me to wait to age 70. And this has to do, I think, Social Security decisions. And, you know, and I'm going to mess with your mind a little bit here, but I think this comes down to more about how much income do you want a month from Social Security benefits. Now, let me give you an example here. Let's take an individual with that at FRA, and we're going to use their turning FRA, I mean full retirement age, this month. That's going to be 66 and 2 months. And let's say their FRA benefit is $1,000. First off, let's say if they had waited, it would be $1,000, but they turned it on and it's at age 62, so it'd be $741 every month. If I took that number and ran it to age 70, no, I'm sorry, run it to age 80, we're going to take from 62 to age 80, they would have received about $160,000 in benefits. Now, if they had waited to FRA, took the $1,000 a month, and I take that number to age 80, they would have pulled about $165,000 in benefits. Or instead of turning it on at FRA, let's say they wait to age 70, instead of $1,000 a month, that's $1,320 in monthly benefits. Nice, nice gain. That's over 30% increase there. From 70 to 80, they would have taken $158,000 in benefits. Yet you catch that? If they turned it on 62 to age 80, $160,000. They waited to FRA to age 80, that's $165,000. And 70, that's $158,000. So you mean I'm waiting longer, getting a bigger check, but you actually drew less. And that impact actually goes because of adjustments made and pushing FRA back created that discrepancy. So if FRA had been at age 65, they would have taken around $14,000 less. That would have put them at what? $156,000 there. Is that right? No.
No, you would have had an extra year of the full retirement age benefit. So that would put you at like $172,000 if you maxed it.
Right. So in that case, what we're seeing is that discrepancy in numbers. So, and they're telling you to wait to age 70 to start it. So when you're comparing out to age 80, the age 70 didn't draw the least amount. And both the 62 and the FRA drew more. So here's the other shift. Now, because what it essentially tells you, no matter when you start it, you're pulling out about the same amount by age 80. Here's the big difference. For the one that turned it on at 62, from age 80 to 90, they're taking $89,920 in benefits. At the FRA, from 80 to 90, they're taking $120,000 in benefits. And the age 70 that waited to turn it on at age 70, from 80 to 90, they're taking $158,400 in benefits. So if each of these individuals lived to age 90, the one that turned it on at 62 drew $248,920. The one that turned it on at FRA took $285,000. And the one that turned it on at 70 received $316,400 in benefits. So the impact is really beyond age 80. But when I'm kind of looking at it, and does this mean absolutely turning on? You know, that difference between the 285 and 316 is, you know, we're talking about $31,000. Not some great amount of money. And when you start thinking about time value of money, was that worth that? So that doesn't mean it's a slam dunk just because somebody says, hey, you should wait to age 70 to turn that on. You have to look at your situation. We're not even considering spousal benefits here or the other person in the household if it's a couple. We're not considering health here and correlation assets on income. If one thing I've pointed out, this wait to age 70 to turn it on is not absolutely the right thing to do. I think I've proven that here. Everybody's situation is different. And what it brings us to is, yeah, you need a conversation to look at the scenarios that's going to work best for you.
All right, Paul in Gulf Shores, you're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Paul?
Hey, guys, love the show. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm a little concerned over, I have three, it kind of went right into with what you guys were talking about. I've got one of the commercials just now. I have three old 401ks, and I did the unthinkable, and I've kind of managed those three myself. I really have kind of done pretty well with them, and I'm 54 years old, and now I'm considering pushing these into like a managed network. And I asked the screener if it was okay to say their name, but it's Fisher Investments, and I'm out of state, so I'm a couple states away, so. I was looking at that, and I just wanted I was kind of telling my wife about it. I'd done a lot of research on them, and I like the fact that they're I think it's a fiduciary or whatever, where they are compensated for their performance, and they're not trying to really sell you all types of investments. They're more incentivized on their performance, which sounded really good. But I'm not asking you to smear them in any way, but is there anything to be cautious about with one of these large firms? Even if they have safeguards in place, are there anything, you know, that you need to be weary of? The amount of money is around $570,000. So,
oh, I knew that.
I just wanted to get y'all's opinion on that.
Yeah, and stick with us, Paul. Here, I knew it was going to be over $500,000 because that's their commercial. If you have $500,000 or more, then you should call Fisher and Investments. And we work with people, you know, I run a financial advisory firm in my day job, and I've done that for a long time. And we don't judge people by asset amount, but on scenarios, can we help them? And with another point there is Fisher Investments is not the only firm that works from a fiduciary standpoint. You know, a lot of firms, and the thing you have to do, and I'm glad you brought that up because we don't talk about that often, but I always kind of look at two parts is who you're working with, what I refer to as dual licensed, and then do they have the, and I kind of define it as the fiduciary license, but the Series 65 or RIA, IAR, and a lot of businesses out there. And they're all supposed to put you first, but certain licenses and scenarios dictate that. So once again, Fisher's not the only fiduciary firm out there, which they're supposed to put you first. Just like at my firm, we put the client first, no matter what. No matter what, we're thinking about their interest and nothing else. How can we help accomplish that? And then they point out to, and I go back to dual licensed firms, and the firm we're speaking of kind of does these commercials where they hate on annuities. And really what they're talking about is they're hating on variable annuities, which requires a securities license, and a fiduciary could put you in a variable annuity. And I kind of frown upon that. I'm not a fan of those as well, but I am a fan of the asset class of fixed annuities where the principal is not at market risk in those tools also. So I think, you know, when you're looking for somebody to help you, should be dual licensed because that's a very important asset class to consider in the mix of what you're doing. Another thing about the firm you mentioned is they mostly do stock selection, Paul. And historically, stock picking typically does not do as well. When you look at from a standpoint of using indexes, they skew a higher return over time. So, and the stock selection could be more expensive way to have your portfolio managed also. So that's from a couple of standpoints there. You may have reason for using them, but they're not the only guys in town. And oh, one other thing you mentioned about the fee. If you make more, they make more. Yeah, they're not the only ones that operate that way as well. That's kind of the way the industry works for the most part. When you get into a situation where somebody, and to understand that difference is basically when they fee assets under management. You know what I'm talking about there, Paul? Do I have you?
I think so.
Okay. You know, it's like, say they charge 1% of assets under management. So if the assets double in 10 years, that 1% is a draw from larger assets. And that's what you want, is you help me grow, well, then you grow as well. Where you get into, and there's a history of products out there, like variable annuities can be feed assets, but can also be commission. Fixed annuities can be done that way also, but you also had a lot of firms that were using mutual funds and stuff that kind of were front-end loaded with sales charges, and we don't like sales charges that reduce the investments that's going to work. So that's a way to understand that. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, bottled water, you know, somebody advertising that the water is filtered that they're putting into the bottles and really making a big deal out of that. And I would bet you most of the bottlers of water filter their water. So just think about it that way. Did you have any other questions, Paul? And I appreciate your call and that question.
Well, yeah, I mean, just really, I mean, as far as, you know, as long as you're on top of your game and just kind of making sure you're watching everything, is there anything to kind of be worried about with somebody that's big like that?
Do they have an office in Gulf Shores?
They do not.
They do not. You know, now look, an example of this, and this is particular, and I'll just tell you, this is my vibe, and I've been in the business a long time, and we work with a lot of clients and assets. I do have clients across the country in my day job, but you know where the impact of clients, where we have the most clients concentrated, is where we have offices there that they can come in, sit down with an advisor, and talk about their money. It just seems to work that way, even though we have better from that. But you've also got to make sure that they are attuned to you and handling things. And financial planning, money management, and all this covers much more than investments. And that's why we have the guided planning system. I don't mean this to turn into a commercial for me, but I think you should be looking at more than just the investments, because it should be about the tax planning, income management, estate planning, and health planning. And sometimes having somebody that knows you, is familiar with you, and can have conversations that extend from those five areas that I mentioned to you there. So I think there's more to it than just investment return or stock selection. Hopefully that helps you, Paul. Thanks for the question. I think it gives the listeners a lot of insight. It's good, other than me just coming out and explaining these things, it's always great to have you ask us a question. Thanks for listening to Winning at Life,
Thank
Paul.
You, Paul.
And if you're thinking of like, gosh, I hear the steps behind me in the hallway at work, you know, I think I'm almost done there. They're laying people off. Or you've already left that job or others, like Paul had talked about earlier, five things to do with your 401k, gregoryricks.com/401k.
All right. This is going to about do it for the show today, but I just want to remind you, if you missed anything, you want to hear the rest of the episode, we have the replays available on the Winning at Life app. We also have the Ask Gregory podcast available on the Winning at Life app. So you can go check that out. That's where we have advice from the show that's segregated by topic itself. All that's on the Winning at Life app. So go ahead and download that. No cost to you. And if you need a financial advisor, go to gregoryricks.com or call the office 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Rickson Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Roth conversion is a taxable event and may have several tax-related consequences. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Rickson Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Rickson Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Rickson.